I'm Mark Caro, and welcome to episode 179 of Caro Pop, sponsored by Revolution Brewing. If you'd like to support this podcast, please go to caropop.com, like John Pragels did. Thanks, John. Everyone in Chicago should try his awesome Bad Johnny's Pizza at the Long Room on Irving Park. This episode digs into how a label approaches and executes ambitious re-releases campaigns for some of its key artists. In this case, Yes and Talking Heads. Rhino Records A&R directors Jason Jones and Steve Woolard have been excavating and presenting the Yes catalog in numerous ways, most recently with this year's Close to the Edge Super Deluxe Box. It contains five CDs, a Blu-ray, and an LP cut from the original flat master by legendary engineer and previous Caro Pop guest Bernie Grundman. A 1972 concert contained in the box, Live at the Rainbow, London, England, also was released as a 3-LP set for Record Store Day. Rhino previously released super deluxe editions of Fragile and the Yes album. If you're keeping track, Tales from Topographic Oceans would be next in order. Woolard also oversaw Rhino's Yes reissues of the early 2000s and talks here about how expectations and presentations have changed over two decades. Is there more of an appetite for Yes now than 20 years ago? 10 years ago, Woolard produced Progeny, which presents seven 1972 Yes concerts over 14 CDs. He describes his approach for that set and how the newly released Rainbow set differs. The Close to the Edge box is a mixed media package, while the Talking Heads 77 Super Deluxe Edition, which came out in November, contains four LPs and four 7-inch singles. What's the reasoning behind including multiple formats in one box and sticking to vinyl for the other? Jones has been overseeing the Talking Heads campaign and describes how he has worked with band members on it. The Talking Heads 77 box includes a live recording of the band's final performance at the New York club CBGB. One of the highlights of Record Store Day last year was the blistering Live at WCOZ set, and a highlight of the recent Record Store Day was Live on Tour 78, which finds Talking Heads getting funkier and more out there after recording more songs about buildings and food. These live vinyl releases have all analog mastering at 45 RPM and sound fantastic. Does Rhino have a treasure trove of unreleased Talking Heads concerts? Can we expect the super deluxe treatment for more songs about buildings and food and the Talking Heads albums that follow? What are Jones's and Woolard's dream projects? Please enjoy this Caro Pop conversation with Jason Jones and Steve Woolard.
I was a kid who grew up in the 90s, so I grew up in the age of, you know, the burgeoning years of reissue culture, you know, through Rykodisc, through Rhino, you know, through, Infinite Zero, Henry Rollins' label, where he reissued The Monks and reissued the early Gang of Four stuff. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I don't know. I think that there's a lot of really great work that was done with the Costello catalog through Rykodisc. I mean, but did those basically mirror the Demon reissues?
I would like to think so, because Val was involved.
Yeah.
With that, and I think he pretty much mirrored that.
Yeah.
Did you ever get the single sets? There were three individual sets of the Costello singles that came out on I think Demon through Val Jennings.
Okay. Were they boxes?
Yeah, three boxes. Yeah.
No.
You want them? No. I got them. You want them?
I'll take them.
I never play them.
Well, so I should just make clear, by the way, since we're doing this as a podcast, and I've always done these one-on-one. So I think you're not my first two-person, because I had Steve Cropper and Jimmy James interviewing each other. But I just want to make clear who's who for people to be able to listen. So Jason is the first person who's talking.
Yeah. Yes. Hello.
Yeah.
That's Jason.
Here. He's the more intelligent one.
And then this is Steve over here.
This is Steve over here. Yes.
But you guys work together on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we do, which is kind of unusual in this day and age.
Usually we, you know, this is the rare occasion where two A&R people from Rhino team up on archival things. Now, I will say Steve has been an inspiration. I was a fan of Steve's work whenever I was buying records before I even started working at Rhino. So, you know, to be able to sit right next to Steve Woolard every day. You know, learn and also gab about records.
Oh, yeah. And bounce ideas off of each other.
I mean,
temperature test on stuff. Yeah.
You know, I do the I oversee the Little Feet catalog and produce all those deluxe editions. And Steve was a very, very, very impactful and important inspiration for that, because he was the one who originally tried to kickstart that with the Electric Lycanthrope.
Right.
What became the Electric Lycanthrope?
Right.
Yeah. For
Record Store Day and Black Friday. So he did that work with who did you use? The engineer
was it? Wynn Davis.
Oh, it was Wynn Davis.
Yeah.
Okay. To do that, it sounds amazing. And you know, I said, why aren't we doing this? And it did well. And then we just kind of continued.
Yeah.
But you know, I produce it, but I always, Steve's my litmus test for things of that ilk, you know, and that just kind of parlayed itself into some of the work that we're doing on the Yes catalog.
Right.
Which is why we are speaking today.
Yeah.
There you go. So Steve, what were the big projects you were working on when Jason was just a youngin' listening to your work?
Well, I did the first round of Yes reissues back in 2001, 2002, 2003-ish, 2003. Yeah. When we first made the deal, I guess BA made a deal with Steve Howe, and we had got access to all of his personal tapes, all of his archival tapes. And Bill Englund, God bless him, went and got them all and transferred them all and sent all the audio files to me. And I went through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of stuff trying to put together the reissues and eventually the live Word is Live box set and various other things. So
yeah.
So that was, I don't know.
Well,
if you liked Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, okay. Of course. I was a big prog nerd. I mean, whenever I was a kid, you know, I was a punk rock kid, and I viewed punk rock as something where it wasn't a narrowing of your listening habits. It was actually an expansion of your listening habits. And also, I'm a big fan of Keith Levine, guitarist for Public Image Limited. And he was a massive Steve Howe fan, as was Bob Stinson of The Replacements, another catalog that I work on. But Yes has been something that's kind of been a through line for a lot of the stuff that I actually like. I was a big fan of Genesis, Peter Gabriel era Genesis, and naturally that just kind of shoved me in the direction of listening to Yes, which, I mean, we just did the Close to the Edge Super Deluxe.
Right.
And Close to the Edge is incredible.
Yeah.
Right. No, it's
and I'm a big fan of Topographic Oceans as well. I love that record.
You're doing that one next, right?
Yes.
Yes. That will be next in the series.
Absolutely.
And it's shaping up to be a beast.
I'm sure it is. I mean, that album's kind of a beast.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So are there like, you know, sort of unreleased songs that are also like a side long that you're finding?
Not unreleased songs,
but performances or takes on what ended up on the album.
Yeah.
Variations on that.
Yeah.
And some very interesting things.
Yeah.
There are bands that ebb and then they flow and then they ebb again. Is Yes a band that, like, over the years, you know, when you're doing stuff in the early 2000s, you're doing stuff now, is there a consistent appreciation of them, or does it actually kind of like go up in some periods? Like now, like maybe there's, you know, with vinyl back and more emphasis on sound, people are more into it than they were 20 years ago.
I'll say that I think that streaming has really facilitated a lot of discovery. And I think that what we've found is that there are certain songs that are really popular now that would not be the ones that would immediately come to mind. Like Long Distance Runaround is one that has become extremely popular because of discovery. And I'll, you know, granted it is an accessible Yes song, but it's not, you know, Owner of a Lonely Heart or, you know, I've Seen All Good People or any of the things that you would think of as being chart hits. Well, and also Sweetness.
Yeah.
Sweetness is a song that has become extremely popular on streaming. You know, there's a lot of people.
That might speak to the demographic that streams heavily.
Yeah.
With that, when they're discovering stuff, what they lean towards. Like, like I would never have thought that the top Beatles song streamed was "But Here Comes the Sun."
Yeah, it is.
It's like, really? Okay.
But yeah. So I think that, you know.
So clearly these are not people that were listening to this shit back in the day.
Because
we would still gravitate towards all the hits and the stuff we grew up with, whereas fresh ears coming into it with a blank slate would just, you know, would lean towards whatever strikes them. And what strikes them is not what hit us back in the day. So it's just it's very interesting.
Well, and, you know, there's certain things where I think sync usage of Yes has been really important. I mean, for me, growing up in the 90s, you know, the cult hit Buffalo 66 used Heart of the Sunrise.
Right.
You know, as a prog nerd back then, I was like, oh, cool, they're using Heart of the Sunrise. This is awesome. Like, because that song is incredible and taken out of the context of what you would think Yes is all about, very, you know, long songs, kind of like them and Emerson, Lake and Palmer kind of being the epitome of everything that punk was supposed to kill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, that like actually taken out of the context, Heart of the Sunrise hits as hard as any Black Flag song. You know, that is purely intense.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing ripper of a song. And I think that that's something that has kind of helped a band like Yes, is kind of, it's kind of demystified them in a way and allowed people to have easier entry points. I will say, you know, everyone think, you know, in the canon of, you know, what are classic albums, you know, everyone considers Fragile and Close to the Edge and Yes album as these kind of like monolithic beasts, which they are, but discovery through streaming and kind of the anonymity of being able to stream stuff.
And not be judged.
And not be judged. I think really does help facilitate that discovery. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's been very interesting seeing the long tail of Yes over the years, you know, from, gosh, over 50 years ago,
through
the different permutations and developments of the most popular formats.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I've always thought that there was this kind of yin yang thing with like streaming, where nobody owns anything and you're listening to it in earbuds, and then these fabulous boxes that come out that are these objects to own. And it's like, sort of like that for the person who likes owning music, this is like a cool thing, and you can get Progeny and you have 14 CDs with 7 concerts on it, or the new, you know, Close to the Edge Super Deluxe box, which has all these CDs on it and a Blu-ray and, you know, the Steve Wilson remix album and a really nice box and a really nice Roger Dean, you know, booklet. Is that like more of a thing now, or are you finding that people, they really want that physical object, even though they may be discovering it through their little AirPods on their little phone?
Well, one thing to just clarify is that the vinyl in the Close to the Edge box is actually, it's a AAA reissue of the original master cut by Bernie Grundman. So it is, which funnily enough, Bernie's one of the few people who has not touched the Yes catalog as of yet. But
So the vinyl on the Close to the Edge box is not the Steve Wilson. No, Steve Wilson is on the CD, but the original
and the Blu-ray.
Yes.
Right. So the original one is okay. Got it.
Yeah. What I've noticed is that there's a longer period of time consumption wise between when people become fans of it on streaming. You know, they go from being people who casually stream something to then, okay, I'm listening to it all the time. Okay, now is the point where I want to actually kind of seal the deal and have this as a physical product. So rather than things kind of happening day and date or simultaneously with each other, I think that there's just a longer curve of the transitioning of people who like a song or an album or an artist via streaming and turning them into physical consumers, you know. And I think that there's always going to be people who are going to want the physical piece at the very beginning. But what we've kind of seen is that there's kind of a big spike whenever something's released, because all the people who want the physical piece happen, you know, they want it. They want it in their hands. They want to read the book. They want to listen to everything. They want to put on the Blu-ray. They want to do the whole gamut of listening. Right. And then there's people who are kind of a bit more casual about it. And then right. they're going to wait and see, okay, is this material actually worth it for me to plop down my hard-earned money and buy this? Which I think, you know, Steve and I, we work really, really hard to try to create things that people would want to spend their hard-earned
dollars. Something I would want to own.
Yeah.
We're essentially making this stuff for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So because thinking there's got to be at least a few people out there.
Relayer, the one after Tales of Topographic Oceans, came out on Rhino High Fidelity.
Yes.
Now, how do you guys work out that record from your project is going to go into the hi-fi? And is there going to be more overlap in that as well?
So probably, well,
it's a different lane.
It's kind of a different lane. Well, it kind of depends, because the at the time that the Relayer hi-fi came out, it was the early days of Rhino hi-fi. And it was also a project where, in the line of Super Deluxe Editions, it was Relayer was very much
down the road,
way down the road. Yeah. So it was not, there was kind of no opportunity to cannibalize any kind of future Super Deluxe Edition with the hi-fi release. Now, granted, we've kind of taken a different perspective on the hi-fi series with, you know, looking for, you know, different kinds of titles than the Relayer, because that series, that was the Doobies and Yes, I think.
No, Doobies came out with Jocko, I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
It might have been like Stooges around then.
I don't know what the companion.
I don't think it was Stooges.
I don't know what
the companion. Or was it Stooges or Ramones? Or was it, I'm trying to think of, there was like this period in the middle where I kind of caught up with them, and there was like those.
Too many of
it's
those.
So long ago.
Yeah.
It's last year. Oh my God. It's
last year, but like we were.
But you're working on like 2028. So
we're working on like 2028 right now, you know, but it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe one day there will be some sort of, you know, a hi-fi of one of the early records. But I think that's not in the cards immediately.
Right. I mean, you feel like you just put out the definitive version of Close to the Edge, right?
I think that it's, you know, maybe it's a little too soon to do something like that. But then again, who knows? I may be wrong. It may be that fans of the hi-fi series really want Fragile or Close to the Edge, and they want Kevin Gray to take another swing at
one of those titles on his new setup.
So, you know, I think it's, you know, I would say never say never, because
you never know.
Exactly.
well and then how about for you guys going forward, doing so Tales from Topographic Oceans, logical next one.
Sure.
Do you keep going to Relayer? Do you, you know, do going for the one? Do you
going for the one? Tremato? Oh, Tremato.
The Tremato Super Deluxe Box.
I would say
nothing is ruled out.
Yeah, I would say nothing's ruled out. I mean, initially, whenever we were kind of thinking about this as a, you know, a more mixed media box set series, mm-hmm. we kind of just made tentative plans through Relayer. But
because that's what we have Stephen Wilson remixes for that.
Yeah.
And we have all the multis. We can do Atmos mixes.
Yeah.
That's what we can do with it. We don't have multis for going for the one.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of limits us as to what we can do there. But who knows?
Yeah. I mean, we, again, never say never. You know, right. We may be four years from now. Woo!
Do those tracks just not exist for Going for the One, or do you don't you just don't have them, or
the multi track tapes are missing?
Yeah. Okay.
We don't have them. So
for no reason other than they're just missing.
So. They're just missing. Yeah.
And it sounds like for the Yes stuff, it's really you guys working with Steve Howe. I mean, does John Anderson chime in on any of it, or
we run stuff by them? Right, we give it to
courtesy rundown of kind of what we're looking to do, the timing of everything, because you know John and you know Steve have you know they have tours, they sometimes have new records, you know, and we want to be mindful of their own interests alongside us doing the archival work that we're doing.
If they have a release schedule, we don't want to get in the way of that. We want to give them space to promote and make noise about their own releases. So
well, Steve, is it easier to sell Yes projects now than it was when you did these back in the early 2000s?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know. There seems to be a very healthy appetite for this stuff. And we are certainly making more interesting packages now than we did in 2001, 2002, because it was just two CDs,
Right. And those would have been all CDs things. Now you got
we didn't even touch on them back then. It was the original CD remastered, and it was some bonus stuff. If there were two CDs, or a lot of times it was a single CD with maybe just some single edits and some alternates and a few outtakes or whatever scraps I could find that would go with the album.
Yeah. Well,
but now we have a broader palette. We have more room to stretch out and do more interesting things and to shine a different light on these albums.
And more of a market for it too, then?
Well, the market has changed. You know, I think that...
23 years ago, physical sales, I'm sure, were a lot different than they are now.
Yeah, definitely.
Probably stronger.
Yeah.
Overall.
And also, it was primarily the CD format.
Yeah.
You know, I think that...
Yeah, right.
You know, that's a whole other ball game than what it is right now. But I will say that, you know, I've been encouraged by some of the studies that I've seen in the news about the fact that CDs have been kind of coming back and proving to be more popular and actually experiencing growth over the last two years or so. You know, I think I don't want to give up on the CD as a format. No. I think it's a fantastic format, you know. But I will say that, you know, one of the things that's been really helpful has been going through the Steve Howe archive, finding those things that were maybe passed on previously because there were the limitations of the formatting at the time.
Sure.
You know, whenever you've got a one CD or in the case of Tales, a two CD, you can't really fit a live show on that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, and also with the live set that you did, you know, I'm sure that was...
Oh, the Progeny thing?
No, not Progeny, the other one, the Word is Live.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
That one, you know, I'm sure that there were limitations in that as far as how many discs that could be.
Sure, because I was trying to create a career encompassing look at the band live, avoiding the Yes shows and Yes songs stuff, you know, I duplicate that, but try to represent each band, you know, have the band playing songs that were germane to that band
sure.
you know, during their era. So it was kind of a struggle, but it was, you know, I turned
no,
out.
No, you did a great job at it, Steve.
I think it turned out all right.
Don't discount your work. You did a great job.
I still listen to it once in a while.
But I think that's something where that's been a big change. And also kind of I think it was in the press, but it made be kind of casually forgotten is that, you know, we have ownership of the Yes catalog now. So that definitely changes some of the financial parameters around what it is that we can create and the budgets that are associated with stuff and margins and all that kind of minutiae that kind of goes into us making
it's things. Slightly more favorable.
Yeah. It's more favorable for us to put out a large set because, you know, we have that opportunity now.
Yeah.
So
We have a freer hand, if you will.
Yes.
And you're still able to do these kind of mixed media sets where you have a vinyl, like the replacements one also. You have like the vinyl of the superior version of it, and then you have these, you know, CDs that have another version of it, and then the live set and that sort of thing. And, and that's, are people into, you know, because they still have their CD player hooked up and they still have their turntable hooked up and maybe they have a Blu-ray. Is there the appetite for that kind of mix thing as opposed to, all right, we're going to give you the version with all vinyl and then we're going to give you the version with all CDs?
So we test that out. You know, there's certain acts where it seems like everything within separate formats works. Like I do the Talking Heads, I oversee the Talking Heads catalog. So the 77 set, you know, kind of the first in the series of super deluxe editions of their catalog, that is split formats. You know, there's all LP, there's all CD with a Blu-ray. You know, we kind of did that on purpose because what we had seen with that fan base was that they kind of just wanted, they did, a mixed media format did not work for that band, for that specific demographic. With the Yes demographic, it seems like they're more inclined to want to have everything all in one piece because they want the vinyl, because they want the CDs, they want the Blu-ray, they want everything all in one place. And I think actually economically, it's better for the consumer for the Yes projects to actually get everything in that mixed media.
In one package.
Rather than, you know, you spend this amount of money for everything for the LP. Right. You spend this amount of money for the Blu-ray. You spend this amount of money for a deluxe CD set with a book and every, you know, all those pieces. It actually is more cost effective to,
certainly
in the case of Yes, to do it as a mixed media format.
Right. And then Live at the Rainbow is in the Close to the Edge box, but it breaks out as a 3 LP, 5 side plus an etching record store day product. So if someone wants to have that on their turntable instead of in their CD player, they can do it that way.
Which, again, that's something where Record Store Day is an opportunity where we can put some of that material that has currently been CD only out into the world as vinyl pieces on the biggest foot traffic records, you know, record retail day of the year. You know, I think that, you know, people have their gripes, people have their complaints about Record Store Day. I love Record Store Day because it truly gives us a lane in order to get certain things that normally wouldn't be on vinyl out there.
Sure.
Sounding fantastic. Sure.
And we're 99% successful with most of this stuff, right?
Correct. I mean,
people seem to like it. So
yeah,
we'll keep doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
There's other Record Store Day stuff that, you know, normally wouldn't come out at retail, just because of the nature of the fact that it's a part of Record Store Day really does kind of help get those projects greenlit. Like I did a Rikuder live release that is, you know, I've been trying for years to try to do stuff with the Rikuder catalog, but, and similar to Little Feet, you know, the Record Store Day release is kind of the test to see what the actual demand would be for more archival stuff. In the case of Little Feet, it worked. And in the case of Yes, you know, we've had really good success with the initial live piece, the breakout from the Yes album box.
Right.
That one LP of that show.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then the Fragile set had a kind of like an alternate version of.
I bought that last year. It was cool.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Steve and I were kind of racking our head around what it is that we could do to kind of make something special and bespoke to break out of that release. And unfortunately, you know, the only live material that was in there was like 3 songs because that's all that we had.
Yeah.
You know, that's all that Steve Howe had in his. In his catalog, in his batch of tapes. So, you know.
So Steve Howe is the keeper of Yes recordings, it sounds like.
He was Yale Bowl. It was the Yale Bowl,
New Haven, Connecticut.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, the Yale Bowl show.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that the one that looked like there's one that looked like kind of like a bootleg for the cover.
Oh, yeah. I wanted it to look like a bootleg. Oh, yeah. I wanted it to look as booty as possible, which
That's kind of our MO.
Yeah.
Like booty as possible.
Yeah, we wanted it to look like what's the bootleg? The
trademark quality?
That
corny phone, the amazing
corny phone,
phone label.
It looked like corny phone. Yeah. So that was like, you know, I initially had an idea of making it so that it was going to be a series where each of the breakouts for Record Store Day was going to look like a bootleg, like the Fragile Rarities was going to have like I don't know an archival photo of like Rick Wakeman like drinking a beer on the cover like, or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But instead, like whenever we actually put out that Record Store, the Yale Bowl release, stores were a little confused. I think we did too good of a job because they actually thought it was a bootleg.
There you go.
But it did well. It did well. It just caused our sales department to have to do a little bit of explaining. Why does it look like this? Because we added so it looked dirty. It looked beat up. It looked awesome.
Yeah.
So Progeny, you guys have put out, I mean, again, that was several years ago. It was 7 concerts from the Close to the Edge tour. I think they were all in North America.
Yeah.
And then for this one, for Record Store Day and in the Close to the Edge box, you have Live at the Rainbow, which I think is maybe right before those, and it's in London.
Actually, it's after.
It's after.
Is it after? I have to check the dates.
Towards the tail end. Yeah. Towards the tail end.
Yeah, the last show from the Progeny box was in November, and I think this is a December 20-something.
Got it.
It was, yeah, towards the end of the year.
So what distinguished this from those other shows?
Well,
it's a bit of international flavor.
Yeah. The story with the Progeny box is that it came across 38 reels of 2-inch tape that were all marked, you know, yes, and had the cities on them. And so I just kept that in my back pocket in case there was a time point in time where the company would be crazy enough to let me to do a, you know, 7-show set, and they said sure. And so all that stuff is of one source. It was all recorded from the tour, whereas this, the
Rainbow
show, was like around the time of the Yes Songs movie.
Correct.
So it was the other night, right?
Yeah.
Right. There were 2 nights recorded. One went for the film, and this was the part that was not used, the concert that was not used in the film.
Yeah.
Performance quality different than, you know, the other concerts?
I mean, they were on fire that whole time.
I mean, it sounds really good. I got a copy. I got an advance of it. It sounds great. I've been listening to it.
They always deliver a blistering performance.
Yeah.
And there are some subtleties and nuances in the songs they play, but it's essentially the same set list, and you know.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
It does. It's
prime, any prime era, Yes, live.
Oh God, yeah.
They are a killer live band. Yeah. Killer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's reason enough to do it, because there's some really intense versions of some songs that are on there.
Well, and that raw energy just kind of undercuts, I don't know, the sort of stereotypes about prog being sort of kind of produced and, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's like,
and the version of Andy
and you and I
on there. Yeah. No, it's, and Close to the Edge itself, which is always a ripper.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, and it's, you know, it's pretty much the full performance. The only thing that we cut was the version of clap.
We didn't have the whole thing. For whatever reason, it must have been a real change or something. We didn't have the whole thing. Clap, Mood for Day, Steve Howe's little acoustic solo piece.
Yeah. We had like 20 seconds of the actual song.
It was incomplete, so we just mixed it.
And the other 2 minutes was applause.
Yeah.
So we're
that would have been great.
Oh well.
When did etchings become a thing, by the way? Like the side 6 etching is very cool.
Did etching become a thing?
Well, when you've got too much material for 2 LPs and not enough for 3.
Yeah.
So you'll have a dead side, and for whatever reason, mm-hmm. it thought, well, why don't we do something artsy-fartsy on the dead side?
No, yeah. It looks really nice. And obviously more companies are doing these very artistic etches. Yeah. I was just trying to think, like, when did that start? Because, I mean,
well,
when I was collecting records originally, I didn't have any etched sides of anything.
Well, wasn't there was a split? Was there a Split Ends record that had an etching?
Well, but you could still play the record,
laser
though.
Etching, laser etching.
A whole different thing. Yes,
yeah, because right. Yeah. You could still play the record. Yeah.
The second Johnny Winter record, where I just had a blank side. It was one and a half sides. It was one album inside. The second Johnny Winter album, second Winter.
They just left that side blank?
Blank. It was great for setting your anti-skating. Yeah.
Oh, great.
There you go.
So I think that part of what we experienced is that there is a lot of records that we have rights to where they're a bit too long for one LP, but not so long that they will actually cover all four sides.
Yeah, it's like 55 minutes.
55 minutes.
Right.
I think that, you know.
And when the songs are long, you can't like sort of put like three on each side.
45 or anything like that. Like with the Talking Heads catalog, there's been two Record Store Day releases that I've put together where they're long enough where cutting them at 45 makes sense because they have shorter songs than, you know, close to the edge.
Yeah, and we can make them punchier.
And make them punchier, and they sound great. Yeah. But I think that's, you know, it's an opportunity to add something artistic and tasteful. At the same time. And also, frankly, it's like, we still want it to sound good.
Of course.
So, you know, and we don't want to compromise that.
Caropop is supported by Revolution Brewing, Illinois' largest independent brewery. Revolution's popular anti-hero IPA combines five classic U.S. hop varieties with bold citrus, floral, and pine aromas. And with the weather still heating up, cold time sure hits the spot. This premium lager is an all-malt beer featuring Midwest two-row barley, Mexican lager yeast, a touch of German hops, and pure Great Lakes water. The brewed low and slow badge on the can attests to a lower temperature fermentation that mellows the beer for a smoother, more flavorful sip. So Talking Heads last year, I got that the double 45 RPM.
Oh, the WCSD release. Oh,
that
yeah.
That was so fantastic sounding. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's like so good. I got I actually picked up a second copy of it, and a friend of mine wanted it, so I got it for him. Great. It's because I sort of like, I'm just gonna get this because I saw someone had it. I'm like, nobody has this. This is too good. That's to like. Nice. I need to make sure a friend of mine gets this. And then there was a different double live set in the Talking Head 77 box.
Correct.
And then you have this one for Record Store Day from 78 tour.
Right.
Is there going to be like another tour live thing for whatever the More Songs About Buildings and Food box is, if there is one?
If there is one, then I would say all indications suggest yes. Like, I think that what I just want to say, which is something I've said on the Hoffman boards before, is, you know, with Record Store Day, you know, and with the Talking Heads catalog, you know, we have a lot of live tape on them. Sire spent a lot of money recording them, and recording them very well, from the very first record. You know, there are actually three shows that we have in the vault of them during the 77 tour. There was a brief time period where the only show that hasn't come out from the 77 tour is the show in Atlanta, where they were actually opening for Elvis Costello and the Attraction. Mm. And they actually had to use part of the Attraction's rig because it was just a one-off show. Apparently, Sire came to them and said, "Hey, do you want to get a good check to go down to Atlanta and play this random show opening for this guy that Columbia is trying to break named Elvis Costello. And they were like, sure, of course. And there's a recording of it, but it's a strange six track recording, which is very strange. And there is two of those tracks are audience.
Right.
Two are drums. One is vocal and the other is all the instruments.
My God.
It's a mess.
My God.
It is a huge mess. So, you know, that's why the WCOZ release, you know, I had always loved that as a part of the name of this band is Talking Heads. And that is a great, great show. And, you know, initially released just the side one of that 2 LP release, and then expanded a little bit more whenever the 2 CD version came out. And then, you know, that's a two track master. Ed Stasium mixed that live. Like, wow. It's incredible.
It sounds like so like in the room with you when you put it on.
Yeah.
And I have the, you know, name of this band and the CD version of that, which is so much longer, is so fantastic. Yeah. But I remember just putting that on and being like, whoa, okay. You know, you're doing it 45 also.
Yeah. Well, and that's the nature of, you know, it's a 50 minute recording. It's, you know, it's just a little too long, for one LP, and, you know, working with the band, they really care about how everything sounds. They really do. And through doing some of these deluxe editions and archival things, you know, it's really kind of reminded them of how powerful and great they were as a live act. You know, the nature of the 77 box was that, you know, we had the good fortune of that CBGB show, which is awesome, and it sounds incredible. Another one cut at 45, but I already had that kind of earmarked because the story around that being the last show at CBGB's that they did, it being kind of like a sire kind of fan club show, that just made perfect sense to be a part of the 77 set.
Right.
With the COZ release, that made perfect sense to me as a record store day release. And, you know, anything that comes from the band as a record store day release, you know, I want it to be special and exclusive to that event, because we have an overabundance of material, which will inform future super deluxe editions. But also, you know, I want to be mindful of this band's roots and their DIY roots and independent retail and independent record stores being at the heart of the fact that this band became really impactful and really popular. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, I want to treat the event with respect and give the band their roses whenever I can.
Right. Well, I love Talking Heads, so I'm gobbling it all up. When you come up with a campaign like this, is this you coming up with a campaign and approaching the band saying, hey, we have this vision of what we want to do, and it's going to have these boxes and these record store day releases and all? Like, is that you guys presenting it to them and them saying, yeah, or like, how does it work?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
Okay, great. I guessed right. Good.
Yeah, I mean, that's something where, you know, we've had a really good run with, you know, doing these kind of deep dives into the complete catalogs of, you know, important artists. You know, the Joni Mitchell archive series. Mm-hmm. You know, that has been a revelatory look at an artist. You know, I've kind of looked at the Talking Heads archival series as something where, you know, this is a band that made a big impact, and this is a band that to me is on the level of the impact that the Beatles had. Hmm. To where, and it's something where it deserves to have that kind of red carpet treatment. You know, it is something like we're also doing that with Yes as well. We want to give these bands and these artists the love and attention that they deserve. You know, and the best way that we can do that is by looking at what is available in the archives. Can we take another look at what may have happened previously, and let's see what we can liberate from the vaults so that the fans can feel like they're experiencing Yes all over again for the very first time.
Right.
You know, each time one of the good things about the way that we release these archival projects is we're allowing fans who have in some cases been fans for over 50 years to have the experience of, oh, I have a new Yes record.
Right.
You know, by holding something new in your hands is a truly magical experience.
Absolutely.
You know, like there's whenever the Tim remix from The Replacements came out, there were people with tears in their eyes telling me how amazing that was.
Really good.
And it was amazing. It was fantastic. And again, Ed Stasium did a fantastic job on that. But that's one of those rare instances where you can truly see the magic and love and passion truly expressed, where someone has that experience of it's a new record from insert artist.
Right.
So is each Talking Heads album going to get a package like Talking Heads 77 did?
For speaking in hypotheticals, I would say all indications suggest yes.
They've not been announced yet, but logic would dictate.
Logic would dictate that all indications suggest yes.
Okay.
However, I will flag that once they stop being a touring act, then that will mean smaller pieces.
Right.
Maybe not a 4 CD set, but maybe there will be. You know, I'm always looking for things. Yeah, I just found a bunch. There's stuff from Naked that I just found.
That I'd be curious about.
Yeah, like that. Like there's, we're always scratching, trying to find more.
It's too bad there are no Naked live performances, obviously. But
I'd
love to hear that one go out on tour.
Oh man, and that would have been great because they had a really great band at that time. You know, it was another kind of expanded band, and you would have had Kristen McCall up there helping out with vocals. You would have had Johnny Ma on guitar. You would have had all the great, French and African musicians who were there, who really helped, that material come to life. So I think it would be great.
Well, look, I mean, Little Creatures and True Stories are not my two favorite albums, but they're all, Talking Heads albums. And if they'd just gone out as a four piece on those records, I mean, how cool would that have been as well? If they'd just been like, all right, just the four of us are out again.
But if they had taken the, supposedly there was an offer for them to play Live Aid, but they didn't do it because of the making of the True Stories film.
Right.
Huh.
That was going to be, There was an offer on the table for that. So, and there were other offers on the table for them to, play one-off shows before
the, you make the greatest concert film and greatest concert. Yeah, you have the greatest concert tour ever.
Yeah.
Pressure. You might put that pressure on yourself to we'll never top this. But on the other hand, you guys are just great. So just go play. You don't need to do, I mean, I was at the Speaking in Tongues tour. So
which show did you go to?
I saw it at Poplar Creek in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, outside Chicago in the summer of 80. What was that? 83, I guess, when the album came out. Yeah. And they played the previous year. And Tina was pregnant, and they were promoting Name of Span as Talking Heads. And
it was
a very like kind of unfocused show. I mean, it was great, but it was like there was like kind of some solo David Byrne stuff, and then it was just like a weird set list and very little early stuff. And then when he came out and did Psycho Killer, and they kept doing these really early things and building the band. I was kind of like, sure. You know.
Yeah. You know what's really interesting about
the name? I'm old.
Sorry. Well, do you know what's really interesting about the name of this band Tour? Is just that it's this hybrid between the Romanian Light Band and what was becoming the Speaking in Tongues Band. Like, right. It's a very, very interesting brief moment in time where, and did the Tom Tom Club open that show?
Not the one that I saw. Yeah. I don't think so.
Because there were a few European dates that they did where the Tom Tom Club opened that show. Like,
it may have been defunct. I have this vague recollection point of seeing defunct open for Talking Heads.
We had, one thing that I've always wanted to do is reissue the defunct records, because technically we have those through Rykodisc, mm-hmm. through the acquisition of Rykodisc. Mm-hmm. Now that is,
there you go.
That's a good band right there. That's a very good band. Well, going back to one of the initial questions that you asked was...
We'll circle back to all of them eventually. Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll circle back. There's... The Talking Heads catalog is amazing, and being able to, again, kind of get some of this material that was maybe passed on whenever the initial dual disc series came out. Those reissues that were part of the Brick set.
Right.
And then
I have that Brick set.
The Brick set is great. Cool. But one thing that I don't think is widely common knowledge is the fact that since it was the two layers of that disc, it actually limited the amount of audio that you could include.
On the CD
on
side.
On the CD side.
Yeah.
You could only include like 59 minutes.
Yeah, 55 or something. Yeah.
Interesting. Material.
Yeah.
So that's, Andy Zaks, who produced that first series, he really tried to pack them out as much as possible, but there were just limitations within the amount of, space that you mm-hmm. could actually take up within that format at the time that kind of, made it so that certain great things were passed by for inclusion. So, I'm
but
kind
theoretically
of,
would not be passed by if there are other things coming up.
Correct. Theoretically would not be passed by for other things.
Who from Talking Heads do you deal with when you're going through all of this stuff? Do you send everything to all four of them, or is one of them
more? All four of them. Oh, yeah. All four of them. But, I have dialogues with all of them about it. Jerry and I talk very regularly. Chris and I talk. David's very responsive and very open, and Tina is great as well. So I think it's a little bit of they all touch it in different ways, and they all give their feedback. And,
they all have a vote.
do they vote against each other's ideas, or is there mostly agreement?
Mostly there's agreement, because usually what I try to do is I try to get it to a place where I kind of present it as fully formed as possible to them, to where they are able to, there's no wavering in what I'm presenting. There's occasionally it jogs their memory in certain ways where they're like, oh, this version of Pulled Up that you found that had the horns on it, did you find the other version of Love Goes to a Building on Fire that we recorded during the sessions? Like, can we hear that?
Right.
Like that. Like, and I had already mixed that and had that prepped. And it's, frankly, it was inferior to the master version. But those instances pop up whenever you're going through archives. It jogs memories, and sometimes they want to hear stuff, and sometimes they're like, you did a great job, approved. So
I assume you were working on this stuff already when for this brief period, they started showing up, the four of them on the same stage together for interviews and the talking, the Stop Making Sense film, you know, discussions and that sort of thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
Did you ever have any moment of like, oh, wow, we have this and now they're going to maybe reunite?
I think, you know, for me as a fan, the fact that they get together and they have dinner, you know, that's to me, I'd rather see them be reunited as collaborators and friends, you know, which is what is happening and what has happened, than, you know, go out on the road. You know, I think that is, you know, that's one of the things that is tricky about dealing with bands that have very long histories. You know, I mean, Yes has a lot of drama, and we're not talking about the 1980
album.
Yeah, right.
The album.
Yeah.
But you know, there's that happens with any band dealing with Little Feet. There's stuff in that band. You know,
oh yeah,
do stuff with the Sex Pistols. There's stuff in that band. It's just
sure
people who are creative collaborators. It's bound to happen at some point because what you're doing, what you're manifesting is really intense. Mm. And it takes a lot of your being in order to express something and harness something that is so intense. And also to be a part of something that ultimately has an impact on people's lives. You know, these things that you dream up, you know, they are extremely important to the people who listen to them and who love them.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, I think that, you know, that's, you know, the fact that Talking Heads are collaborating and supportive of everything that we're doing. That's
great.
That's the real win right there.
Yeah.
Right. Cause there's certainly catalogs that do not get anywhere because it's like, oh, we'll never get them to agree on anything.
Yeah, I mean, that happens to us daily.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happens to us daily.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's a very, very long process to try to convince people or give them a good reason why they want to look back.
Is the Live on Tour Record Store Day release, is that the same one as that Warner Brothers promo release from like 78, like the same recording?
Correct, but the full show. That is what was released as the promo LP.
The Warner Brothers record show
also is compromised from an audio perspective because they crammed 50 minutes on one LP.
Right.
So it sounds not great.
A friend of mine had it, and I've seen it a couple times, but I realized I did all this, you know, online research, and almost every copy that you can find is one of the counterfeit copies.
Yeah, counterfeit copies.
And
actually, there's two masters for it. There was an initial master that Warner Brothers put out really without much consultation from the band. And then the band and Ed Stasian went back and remastered it and re-envisioned it, and that was what came out later in 79. So it depends on the actual catalog information that you have on your copy as to what master was used. Mm-hmm. Obviously the second master, the band approved master, is the superior one,
but it's a moot point now.
Yeah, it's a moot point now.
But now the superior one is coming out for record.
Now the most superior one is actually coming out because it's the full show.
Right.
And you know, you can tell that they're on the brink of expanding into the kind of oral endeavor that is Fear of Music.
Right.
You know, it's a really interesting show. And they sound great.
Right. Yeah. No, there's like a long intro. Is it on New Feeling where they just have like this kind of stretched
rave
out?
Up. Yeah. It's a little rave up there.
Yeah. I know. Cause that's not on the other version. I don't think.
No.
Because I was like, I don't remember hearing this one. So
no. And also that's at a good point where they're also stretching out on Psycho Killer as well.
Right.
that's been really interesting to listen to, is the different permutations of how Psycho Killer has evolved. And frankly, a lot of that early repertoire evolved over the years and through with them just being on the road so often, and the expansion of the band,
right?
With the Remaining Light tour,
that's a very different Psycho Killer version, also. And just the two on the Name of This Band CDs are different. Right. Do you two have any like dream projects you want to work on together, or anything you're trying to pull off that you want to just reveal here?
So my dream has come true in that we are releasing a quadio of Beaver and Krause's Gandharva and All Good Men on one disc.
What?
This has been Steve's passion project.
My passion project for 25 years. For
years. Yeah. He's wanted to do a Beaver and Krause
release. A Beaver and Krause release, yeah. So, yeah, Gandharva, which was never properly issued in quad.
Yeah.
And All Good Men, which has never been issued in quad. I just found the tapes from the engineer that did the session.
Wow. Do you have to have a special setup to play those discs?
Blu-ray player and a surround sound system. So if you've got a Blu-ray player with your home theater system, you're good to go.
As long as you have like other speakers aside from just two.
Yeah, if you can play the Yes Atmos disc in any of these box sets, you can play these and you will be astounded.
Yeah, you can definitely do that.
Yeah. So there you go. So that's, yeah, that's mine. What's yours?
Mine? Well, I've got like three that I would love to be able to do eventually is, for the longest time, I've wanted us to do a compilation around our more late 70s and early 80s jazz repertoire. Oh, things like Yellow Jackets and Michael Franks and stuff like that. Stuff that actually has been sampled a lot in hip hop and stuff that has actually been doing fairly well in streaming, but to kind of recontextualize it in a way. I've been trying to get that project. I have a whole series of 2LP versions of like these kind of comps that have everything from, Billy Cobham to, let's see here, all just different kinds of stuff. So I would love to do something like that. The other stuff from Grover Washington Jr. that we have, the non-Wine Life.
Yeah, stuff that isn't Wine Life.
Yeah, stuff like that, all of that. The Donald Byrd that we have.
Yeah.
Love Has Come Around era stuff, just kind of recontextualizing that stuff, kind of in the framework of, Steely Dan got really popular, kind of making jazz influenced pop.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an interesting to flip the script to see how did these jazz artists try to make pop music that could be played on top 40.
Right.
Just I don't know. That's always been a thread and a narrative that's been intriguing to me, and the fact that there's hip hop producers and out there who are also kind of following that through line, to me that just kind of shows me that there's some sort of cultural conversation that's already ongoing. We just have to kind of express it.
No, it's an interesting period. I mean, like the Kraft Jazz Dispensary, kind of in that mid 70s, you could hear like some of the back and forth with some of the Steely Dan jazzy things but you're talking about going a little later than that.
Whenever the funkadelic influence comes in, whenever the electro influence kind of comes in, that's to me some of the most interesting stuff that we have in our catalog. And also there's certain tracks from Zapp that are actually jazz compositions. So it's like kind of, I don't know, creating that kind of like, ping ponging of cultural conversation is something that's really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I would love to be able to do something like that. The Germs, the band, the LA punk band, The Germs, they haven't gotten a proper archival box And that's a band that is really important. And I think that even though they made one record, there's more material that's there. So I would love to have something like that happen. And also, finally, for the longest time, I've wanted to do something around Van Dyke Parks's work,
Discover America,
yeah, and the SO Trinidad Steel Band,
right?
Because those records were kind of made at the same time,
right?
And also, we have a previously unreleased SO Trinidad Steel Band show in our vault.
There you go.
From 1971, it's actually from the same reels where the Little Feet live show that's in the Sailing Shoes Deluxe.
Oh,
it's that same show. There's this wild show that Van Dyke put together for the World Wildlife Federation, where it's Little Feet, it's Earth, Wind, and Fire, it's SO Trinidad Steel Band, it's like a couple of other artists as well. But we've got all those reels. And whenever I love the production work of Van Dyke Parks and his work in particular on the SO Trinidad Steel Band record, and by proxy, Discover America is my favorite Van Dyke Parks record. So it kind of come in with this like Van Dyke Parks's tour of the Americas by kind of showing the influence and the ping ponging of the SO Trinidad Steel Band on Van Dyke Parks's Discover America and vice versa. So I think that that's something that I would love to be able to do at some point.
Yeah,
this is all stuff I need to discover. So I know like a little earlier Van Dyke Parks. No, it sounds really cool. And I just don't, it's hard to be up on everything, but that's
there's so much great music out there.
There's so much music.
It ties to Steve's t-shirt too, because that's some of the first Van Dyke Parks stuff I heard was his work on Smile. So well, there you go. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This will obviously come out after Record Store Day, but you have a bunch of stuff coming out that looks pretty cool. I don't have any. I should admit this. I don't have any of those PIL records. So that first issue looks cool.
Oh, man. Can I tell you a quick story about that?
Absolutely.
So the Public Image Limited record, it is the thought to have been lost U.S. version of what was intended for release of their debut album. Basically, it was re-recorded and remixed during the Metalbox sessions. So it's astounding. It is also maybe one of the most blatant confrontational records that would have ever been released by a major label, and it's finally seeing the light of day.
Wow.
It's an astounding piece of sonic wizardry. Like it is amazing. You take the dubbed out aspects of Metalbox and you apply it to First Issue, and it is incredible. It's that has always been a project that I dreamed would see the light of day, but I'd always heard that the tape was lost. But then in talking to Bill Englott, we actually found it. It was hidden. It was hidden in our vault.
How excited were you when you found it?
You know, as someone where, you know, John Lydon's work as an artist means a lot to me, through the Sex Pistols, through Pill. I mean, those first three Pill records are incredible, and I really enjoyed the ones after as well. To find something specifically from that band that hasn't been heard before, you know, like to still be finding previously unreleased archival material from a band like that. It's really important work. You know, this is, you know, we're trying to, I don't know, liberate as much stuff as possible because it needs to be heard.
Sure.
Yeah, that's great.
And when you have the artist's support in actually doing it, you know, that's just icing on the cake.
That's the big win.
That's the big win.
And I'm gonna have to chase that one down, it sounds like.
It sounds awesome. It looks awesome. And hopefully, again, hopefully that would pave the way for more Public Image Limited stuff. You know, one of, I guess I'll take a fourth dream project. I would love to be able to do a high five metal box.
Could do the metal box box.
Yeah. Like, do, well, there's already been a metal box box. Universal actually put one out and it's incredible. But to actually do a proper AAA reissue of, I guess we would have the rights to second edition or Flowers of Romance, like that would be incredible to me, because I think that those records are sonic marvels. And to have someone like Kevin Gray add his touch to them would be just icing on the cake.
Yeah,
that'd be very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, great talking to you guys. I really appreciate it. And you know,
I'm really having this, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
That's all for episode 179 of Carol Pop. Thanks so much to Rhino A&R directors Jason Jones and Steve Willard for taking us behind the curtain of the Yes and Talking Heads re-release campaigns. Go to store.rhino.com to buy the super deluxe editions of Yes's Close to the Edge, Fragile, and the Yes album, and Talking Heads 77. I also highly recommend chasing down those Talking Heads Record Store Day releases live on tour and live at WCOZ, as well as Yes's Live at the Rainbow, London, England. Carol Pop is produced by Chris Swake, who's always working close to the edge. Thanks to all who support Carol Pop. If you'd like to throw something into the Carol Pop kitty, we'd be much appreciative. You can give $24 or whatever you'd like at carolpop.com. Thanks so much for listening and being here. I'm Mark Caro. Please follow Carol Pop on the so-called socials at Carol Popcast. You can follow me as well at Mark Caro at MarkCaro. Please share this episode, subscribe, tell your friends, and tune in again next week for another Carol Pop conversation. Thanks.